Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is WBEZ's Weekly News Roundup. Today on the Roundup, the reign of Mike Madigan comes to an end.
Former House Speaker Mike Madigan is leaving Springfield altogether.
Governor Pritzker gives his state of the state.
As all of our families have had to make hard choices over the last year, so too does state government.
And businesses start to ramp up as COVID-19 vaccines get into more arms.
The city is expanding indoor dining limits starting today.
Indoor dining will now be allowed at up to 40% capacity or 50 people, whichever is fewer.
We'll take you inside those stories and more with WBEZ's Dave McKinney and WTTW's Heather Sharone. Dave, Heather, welcome to you both, but let's jump right in with the Madigan story. 1 month after resigning the speakership, Madigan announced he's leaving the House seat he's held for 5 decades. Dave, what happened here?
In a way, it was sort of predictable. We just didn't know when it was going to happen. I mean, when he lost his bid to be speaker for a 19th term last month, it struck people as just a matter of time before he decided to hang up his spikes. I mean, he held this House seat for 50 years for the Southwest Side area that's surrounding Midway Airport. You know, and he issued a statement that laid out, a list of accomplishments over those 50 years and talked about being the target of, in his words, vicious attacks by people who sought to diminish his accomplishments. And so there was that flavor of it. But one of the lines in his statement yesterday that stood out to me was how, you know, he felt at peace with this decision. And, of course, hanging over his head right now is fallout from the Commonwealth Edison bribery investigation that is still very active. Coming out of the U.S. Attorney's Office. So, you know, that a lot of people are mindful of that and wondering what the next shoe to drop on that is going to be.
Well, Heather, what was your reaction? Did you ever think that you would see this day?
I did not. Keep in mind that there has been Michael Madigan in the Illinois House my entire life, and he's been speaker for most of that time. And, you know, it was one of the immutable truths of Illinois politics that governors could come and go. Some would end up in jail. Some would be defeated at the ballot box, but Michael Madigan would endure, and that is no longer the case. So this is really a new era, full stop, for Illinois politics, and it's going to be fascinating to watch it develop.
Well, Dave, even though he was no longer House Speaker, there's no getting around that he still wielded a significant amount of influence, right? So now with him stepping down, could there be a power vacuum in Springfield?
Well, I mean, Sasha, I think that's inevitable. I mean, just think of the institutional memory that walks out the door with Michael Madigan. I mean, in a career that, you know, undoubtedly involved casting tens of thousands of votes and shaping Illinois law in every imaginable way, you know, he's no longer there. And so what you have now is a successor in Emanuel Chris Welch, a Democrat from Hillside, who, while he's been a lawmaker now for, you know, a respectable amount of time, you know, this leadership thing for him is a new thing. And you look at the other legislative leaders in the Senate. Senate Republicans have a new leader this session. In the Senate Democratic Caucus, Don Harmon, the Senate President, he's relatively new in his post. And so you have a lot of inexperienced people in the legislative leader's position. I mean, Jim Durkin is now the veteran, the House Republican, the minority leader. So there's just a lot of institutional memory that walked out the door with Mike Madigan. And I think, you know, right now, that puts Governor Pritzker kind of in a position now where he's sort of the top dog, if you will, in terms of trying to get things through and managing all of this.
I think that the question is, what does the next era of Illinois politics look like? And I think that part of Madigan's institutional memory that, you know, now Speaker Welch and other lawmakers can't take advantage of is the ability to make the sausage. And he relentlessly did that behind the scenes. You know, this is a man who famously doesn't have a cell phone. He doesn't use email. This is not somebody who was one of those politicians who burns up Dave's phone and my phone to talk about what they're working on and, you know, is trying to get in front of the camera. So his his legacy, I think, will be in his ability to get those hot button pieces of legislation through the Illinois House. And Speaker Welch will be judged on whether he can do that at the same level, which is a very, very high bar. And it will open the door for, as I said, that progressive group of lawmakers who at times felt stymied by Madigan's iron grip on the caucus, who were very frustrated that they couldn't get the, for example, the rent control bill to the floor for a vote and other pieces of legislation. So there are a lot of challenges looming.
Well, let's turn now to another story out of Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker gave his State of the State address this week, and he laid out his proposed $41 billion budget for Illinois. Dave, what were a couple of the main takeaways that people should know?
First and foremost, after the defeat of his graduated income tax amendment in November, there is not a plan here to increase income taxes. That was something that, you know, I think Republicans were bracing for and predicting, and there were even hints of that in the race for Illinois Speaker. I mean, there was a point in time, I believe, in December where Speaker Madigan, appearing before the Black Caucus, said, look, if the governor's behind a tax increase this session, I'll help him pass it. So there was really kind of a question, will he do that? And the answer is he won't. But by and large, this is sort of a steady-as-she-goes, low-drama kind of budget. I mean, the only controversy, I mean, there were elements of controversy, but, you know, the ending nearly $1 billion in corporate tax credits, that got Republicans riled. I mean, keeping education funding static, that got some members of the Democratic caucus a little bit up in arms. But by and large, this is something that I think will probably go through without a whole lot of trouble this spring. And of course, the one wild card out of all of it is that right now in Washington, there are talks surrounding President Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief package. And in that is money for state and local government. And it's projected that Illinois, under the plan that's now being formulated in the House, could get up to $7.5 billion. And if that money comes in, you know, that's certainly going to take a lot of the financial pressure off of state government here for Pritzker as he goes into reelection mode, possibly.
This budget is probably best understood as sort of a let's just get through COVID budget. The vaccines are rolling out and hopefully the economy will pick up. And I think the governor is hoping to perhaps hold his breath and get to reelection without having to make lawmakers take tough tax hike votes, even though the state really, in the long run, in the big picture, still is in a precarious financial position.
That's WTTW's Heather Sharone. Also with us this week on the Roundup is WBEZ state politics reporter Dave McKinney. Dave, Heather, there's plenty more big news to cover, so let's get into some of these stories.
The city is expanding indoor dining limits.
The statewide 7-day coronavirus positivity rate in Illinois is now down to 2.7%, the lowest since July 9th.
Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot is getting backlash for spending more than $281 million of federal COVID-19 relief money on the Chicago Police Department.
The one pot of money that could have been used for small business support, for housing relief for our neighbors, to help prevent violence in our communities. That's what we're talking about.
Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot got her second dose of the vaccine this morning. Afterwards, she and Dr. Allison Arwoody gave an update on both vaccinations and infections in the city. Heather, what did we learn?
Well, we learned that white Chicagoans are still being vaccinated at a faster rate than Black and Latino Chicagoans, although, as we've talked about, Black and Latino Chicagoans are more likely to get COVID and suffer severe illness and, of course, die. However, the mayor took pains to say that it is improving, and they released new data that showed that 18% of those who have been vaccinated by this point are Latino and 19% are Black, which is an improvement of about 10% over the first round of the first phase of the effort, which just included healthcare workers and long-term care facility residents. So she was pleased and she called it a breakthrough, but there's no doubt a lot of work to be done to get the vaccine not only to the people who want it, but also to convince those who might be reluctant based on a whole host of historical wrongs and systemic racism in the medical system that they have to be convinced that the vaccine is safe and it's something that they should get. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but the mayor really wanted to emphasize emphasize that progress is being made because, of course, she has promised to vaccinate with an eye on equity, putting those most vulnerable at the front of the line.
Well, Dave, on a state level, Governor Pritzker this week quite passionately defended his administration's handling of the pandemic in Illinois. And then he went on the attack on Republican lawmakers that he said have thrown obstacles in his way. So what's his criticism and how is it affecting the COVID response at the state level?
During his budget speech, I mean, we really saw kind of this veering off into, you know, a section dealing just with the Republican haranguing, I guess you could say, about his efforts. I mean, look, in a reelection campaign, Pritzker is going to be judged in his handling of the pandemic. There's no question about it. We've seen nationally Republicans, you know, trying to use this issue of getting, you know, reopening schools against Democrats. So, you know, I think there's heightened political sensitivity about the question of how he's handled the pandemic. During the speech, he singled out Republicans for, as he said, encouraging businesses to defy health guidelines, spreading conspiracy theories about COVID deaths, and fighting mask guidelines, including, you know, going to court here in Illinois to try to do that. The line he used that stood out in the speech was, in essence, they eliminated the fire department, burnt down the house, and poured gas on the flames, and now they're asking why we're not doing more to prevent fires. So I think it was a little bit of just, you know, trying to frame their arguments in a way that Republicans are not, in Illinois, helping, you know, advance the cause of getting rid of this pandemic. Republicans, of course, would disagree with that. But in terms of the overall state response so far, I mean, I think the biggest knock is, as it is in every other state, demand is outpacing supply here. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's the one area that Pritzker wishes he had more control over. But that's a function of the federal government. And the amount of vaccinations the state is getting on a weekly basis has been steadily growing. And I think he's predicting next week that Illinois is in line for 500,000 doses. So, I mean, it's slow and methodical and happening. And then one other thing about his overall handling of this is that, you know, he mentioned there never was a situation where hospitals could not meet capacity. You know, there were enough ventilators. So he feels as if the state has really kind of gotten over the hump a little bit with this. Still more work to do. But, yeah, Republicans were on the firing line here a little bit in his budget speech.
Well, Heather, I want to stick with COVID news for just another moment because the city announced this week that it's expanding indoor dining at bars and restaurants. So they can now operate at 40% of their normal capacity or no more than 50 people. What do you take away from this? Does Chicago have enough of a lid on the virus that we can safely just loosen restrictions like that?
Well, it's clear that there has been a significant amount of progress made in reducing the spread of the virus in recent weeks. And there are fewer than 400 cases per day on a 7-day rolling average in Chicago. And the test positivity right now is 3.6%. Typically, experts say if that figure is below 5%, it shows that there is good control of the virus. So that is all reassuring metrics. However, the last time that Chicago was in a similar place in the pandemic was early October. So what did the city do? Well, the city loosened rules on indoor dining and indoor drinking.
Right.
And what happened? Well, we were off to the races toward the second wave of the pandemic, which was really deadly for a lot of people. Now, do I have a crystal ball handy? Do I know that we're headed towards another wave? I, of course, do not. I, you know, have that on back order. I'm told it's coming anytime. But it should be something that people keep in mind that it is a possibility. And it's why you hear Mayor Lightfoot and Dr. Allison Arwady, the commissioner of the Department of Public Health, saying, keep washing your hands, keep wearing your masks, keep maintaining your social distancing, because this pandemic we've seen can really flip on a dime. And that could have really profound implications for the city and businesses.
Another story this week, Heather, Mayor Lori Lightfoot's facing criticism from activists and aldermen over how she handled federal COVID-19 relief funds. The city spent more than $281 million in federal dollars on the Chicago Police Department. What can you tell us about that?
Well, this was from the pot of money that the city got when Congress approved what's been called the CARES Act. So this was the massive federal relief package. In all, Chicago got $1.2 billion, and a portion of that money was earmarked for use to be reimbursed for personnel costs. And so the city submitted $281 million to the federal government from the police department saying, this is what it cost us to respond to the pandemic with our police department. Now, all of that money was budgeted before. So it was essentially just shifting the burden from those costs from the city's taxpayers to federal taxpayers. And what was upsetting to activists and progressive aldermen was that same pot of money could have been used for other purposes. It could have been used to help people pay their rent or businesses stay afloat. And they just did not want that money to go to the police department. However, this was really a debate that they waged and lost back in June. There were 9 aldermen who voted against spending this money under the mayor's authority, and they voted no because they didn't want any of it to be used to reimburse the police department. And that was just the first of what has been many fights over how the police department should be funded, at what level it should be funded, and whether there is a way to change the systematic problems with policing in Chicago by reducing the police department's budget. Mayor Lightfoot has said that she will not allow that to happen, and this is going to be an argument that we're going to see continuing for many months.
Mayor Lightfoot pushed back on this sort of criticism.
You know, criticism comes with the job of mayor, but this one's just dumb, and here's why. So the federal government came to cities like Chicago and said, we will provide you with reimbursable funds for monies that were spent in response to COVID-19. So we saved taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars by saying yes to the federal government. So should we have said no? No, 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 no. Federal government will incur this expense. We'll put this burden entirely on City of Chicago taxpayers, and you can take your money elsewhere. That would be foolish. And of course, we didn't do that.
Dave, talk about the reaction we're seeing at City Hall. Will there be any sort of reckoning over this issue?
It's a good question. I mean, this is a volatile issue. It seems like Mayor Lightfoot is sort of taking incoming from all directions. And, you know, I think this is another problem she doesn't need, but it's something we've not seen, you know, we've not seen the end of it yet.
One last story that I want to touch on, and that's a story Heather reported on about the city flagging 41, quote unquote, problematic statues. And statues and monuments have become something of a contentious issue in this racial justice movement that we're seeing, especially lately. So can you, Heather, bring us up to speed, first of all, on what's going on?
Well, this was really prompted by the mayor's decision to remove the Columbus statues in Grant Park and Arago Park when they became really a flashpoint for debate over what sort of public monuments the city should recognize. And the 41 monuments flagged by the commission, some of them made sense. If you've ever been on Michigan Avenue, right at the Art Institute, the entrance of Grant Park, there's a very large statue of a Native American throwing a spear. And the commission said that it was really a sensationalistic depiction of the Native American. So that, they said, was obviously problematic. But what all of the headlines across the country were was that the commission also flagged statues of 4 presidents, including 5 statues of Abraham Lincoln, throughout the city. And there were many people who were really, frankly, offended by that because, of course, it was Abraham Lincoln who kept the Union together in the Civil War and who signed the Emancipation Proclamation ending slavery in America. But this is a debate that we're going to see continue for many months. It's not clear what will happen to these quote-unquote problematic monuments or statues. And people have until April to weigh in on what they think should happen. And they can go to the website at chicagomonuments.org to participate in the public process that will, I think the mayor hopes, serve as a way to sort of sort through these issues in a collective way without resorting to protests or violence or name calling. But people feel very, very strongly about these monuments and statues.
Well, before I let you both go, briefly tell us what stories you're watching over the next few weeks. Dave, you first.
Well, I mean, the first thing is, you know, back on the U.S. attorney here in Chicago, the top federal prosecutor, as is the case with all the prosecutors, the U.S. attorneys around the country, was asked by the Biden administration to submit resignations effective at the end of this month. And so, you know, there's some question about what John Lausch's status is going to be moving forward. So that's issue one. The other part is, you know, we're going to be cranking up the General Assembly here before long, probably beginning in the month of March. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how, some of these ideas that Pritzker laid out in his budget speech evolve, starting with his budget, starting with ethics reform, starting with whether there's a big utility omnibus. So those are the things that I've kind of got on my front burner.
And you, Heather?
Well, we've got a full city council meeting on Wednesday where this debate over how to spend the next round of COVID-19 relief funds will come to a boil. On that agenda is expected to be a plan to use $80 million from the package signed by former President Trump in December to help people pay rent and to stay in their homes during the pandemic. That will be a big debate. There are also several high-profile police misconduct settlements that the city council will consider next week, including $400,000 for a woman whose son was killed by police while he was suffering a mental health episode, a story that I know that WBEZ and WTTW has reported on all too often in recent years.
That's WTTW politics reporter Heather Sharone and WBEZ politics reporter Dave McKinney. Thanks to you both. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Sasha Ann.
And that's WBEZ's weekly news roundup. Want more conversations and deep dives like this one? Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast. And if you take less than a minute to give us a rating and review, lots of other people will be able to find us. Don't miss the best COVID-related Q&A on the radio featuring Dr. Mia Taramina. That drops into this feed Sunday morning. The weekly news roundup is brought to you by WBEZ's Reset Team. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again soon.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.